Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
High above the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information about a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A British man becomes the first to walk the length of the Amazon River. The Timbers named the coach for their first major league season. And longtime Senator Ted Stevens is killed in a plane crash.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, maybe not that shocked, but demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, mortals. This is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, August 10th, 2010. After 859 days, Ed Stafford arrived at the river's mouth on the Atlantic Ocean in Maruta, Brazil, having walked more than 4,000 miles the length of the Amazon. The crux of it is, if this wasn't a selfish boy's own adventure, I don't think it would work, said the 34-year-old British Army captain. I'm simply doing it because no one's done it before. Stafford started the route with a friend on April 2, 2008. Within 3 months, the friend had quit, and Stafford continued on his own.
I have no idea who we're talking about or why we're talking about him. Who is this?
His name is Ed Stafford. And he walked over 4,000 miles to walk the entire length of the Amazon River.
How can you walk? I don't understand. I know that sometimes there's a bit of lingo involved in these things, but how can you walk a river?
Well, you walk along the river, the same route as the river.
Right.
You walk on the bank of the river, Rick. You don't actually walk on the river itself.
Well, you know, unless you're our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, Don. So he walked the length of a river.
A 4,000-mile river. The Amazon is the longest river in the world, and no one has ever walked the entire length of the Amazon River before.
Well, first of all, we don't know that. That's a thing that can't be known by human history and human minds.
They didn't tell anyone.
Or they weren't white, in which case it doesn't count.
Yes, but, okay, sure.
Are you about to ask why would somebody have done it? Why would this guy have done it?
Why would somebody who wasn't doing it just to, like, tell everybody that they did it do it?
No, okay, that's a fair point. I can't really argue with that, even though I don't really know what you just said.
Anyway, the first guy that he was doing it with quit after 3 months.
So this is stupid. We're just walking in a straight line. I'm going home to eat.
I'm tired, he said. Stafford eventually continued on his own, meeting Gadiel Cho Sanchez Rivera, a 31-year-old Peruvian forestry worker with whom he completed the trek. There have been at least a half a dozen previous journeys along the length of the Amazon, beginning high in the mountains of Peru, but those expeditions all used boats. Along the way, Stafford confronted flesh-eating piranha, the giant anaconda, disease, food shortages, and a run-in with Indians who threatened his life, but ultimately only confiscated his machete.
Okay. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be so negative about it. Whatever. He's not harming anybody, I guess. It just seems like one of those things that's ultimately pointless. We're talking about a guy just engaging in a complete and total waste of time.
Well, he spent 2 years walking the length. I mean, it's a grand adventure. I wouldn't do it. But
I guess. I don't mean to sound like I'm reflexively sort of just being cynical about it. I'm just saying, you know, here's why, I think. Again, and I shouldn't criticize too much because, you know, my wife went to the Amazon. So it's not like a place where I really have the ability to throw a lot of stones, although I shall. It's the idea of just spending 2 years just walking from here to there with no sort of larger purpose. I mean, had he been there before?
That I'm not sure. I don't know.
I think here's why it bugs me the wrong way. I figured this out. It's not like I'm opposed to adventure. I'm really not. Now look, I'm not much of an outdoor guy. As Evan Danda would say, I am the indoor type. And I'm not opposed to the people other than myself engaging in activities that I myself would not find interesting. Again, you know, my wife is going to goddamned the hell is she going this fall? Istanbul or some nonsense? Is that a place? That's in Turkey, right?
Yes, it used to be Constantinople.
All right. Well, in any event, so she's going there.
I know
that
from a They Might Be Giants song.
I think that's actually why she picked it. I think she was just looking at the map and going, where shall I go next? She was just spinning a globe. And anyway, so, you know, she's gone to the Amazon and she did this whole thing of, like, eating a bowl of, you know, like, weeds or something. And then, like, yeah, I don't know, sleeping on a bed of husks somewhere in the middle of the river. And it's all very exciting.
Is she hoping to catch some kind of tropical disease?
I think so.
I mean, given the nature of her adventures.
Well, and especially given the fact that all of the medicine they give her to ward off tropical disease has like a 1 in 5 chance of giving you the tropical disease. Where they actually say, they're like, now if you take this, you might in fact get dengue fever or whatever it is. So it's not like just because I don't do it, I don't recognize. Don't think I'm without romance in this regard. I understand man versus nature and exploring and going into the depth of one's own soul as one traverses the countryside and deep into the unknown of whatever. Here's where I got off the boat with this guy, sort of figuratively speaking.
Yeah, because he wasn't on a boat.
No, it's the spot where he took 2 years to do it. That's my thing. Because
well,
you know
what? Walking.
Because you know, no. But I'm not just saying that. I'm saying that. How old is he?
He's 34.
34. If you are 34 years of age and you have the time and money to just be walking next to a river for 2 years, I automatically dislike you until you give me a reason not to. He is like that Steve Fawcett dick. That, as my wife, she once put it. Did they ever find that guy? Is he dead? Steve Fawcett, the balloon guy.
I have no idea.
You know, the billionaire hot air balloon ass. So we were watching the news one night on, like, the 75th day in a row where they were, you know, billionaire Steve Fawcett floating around the world in a balloon, still gone. And Lara said, why are we subjected to hearing about stamp collecting of the rich and famous? And I said, you know, that's a really good way to put that. So that's my thing. It's the difference between carving out a little slice of your life to go, have a bit of an adventure, or just being some schmuck who backpacks around Europe for a year and a half, in which case I automatically dislike you.
Well, he said that he did it because people told him it was impossible. And I guess that just rubbed him the wrong way, mister. It cost an estimated $100,000. Money was raised by donations and corporate sponsors. And he had an internet satellite phone. So he blogged about his trip and downloaded episodes of The Office.
Oh, well, see, now I feel like a dick. Now I can't hate him. And plus, again, it's not like I'm opposed to that sort of a thing. A book I just reread and that now that Lara is now reading, because she's on this whole the people traveling to dangerous places kick after reading the Bill Carter book, The Fool's Rush In. So she's reading that Douglas Adams book, Last Chance to See.
Oh, that's a wonderful
which
book.
Which is an amazing book.
Yeah.
And I will say another book, which is one of my favorite books of all time, is I'm a big fan of when fiction writers do nonfiction works because you get a different side of their personality. Probably the best Michael Crichton book ever written is a book called Travels, which is in fact not fiction at all. It's just a series of essays that he wrote while traveling around the world. He hiked Mount Kilimanjaro, I think, or no. What's the one that's covered with ash? Mount Fuji. So he hiked Mount Fuji and he did this thing of swimming with like the gap mouth shark or whatever the thing is. So I guess I can't dislike him that much if he raised the money from outside sources, because otherwise you just think he's just some Nancy boy,
right,
who has $5 billion sitting around and just hires a bunch of natives. I think that's the other thing, is I think that media depictions of people who go on adventures have been so rife lately. It's like the Everest thing with just a bunch of rich bastards who hire a bunch of people from the area to just carry their spongy white ass to the top of a hill somewhere so that they can then send photos to their friends and say, look at me, tell Chansey and everybody else at the club that I was able to get to the top of the hill.
So. Well, that's sort of the way of the white imperialists, though, isn't it?
But I mean, there's guys who do it legitimately, and then there's guys who just want to say they did it, and so they just take the most pampered route possible to do so. He does not sound like that guy, so I retract all my hate. I retract 80% of my hate.
Former Alaska Senator Ted Stevens has died in a plane crash. Former NTSB Vice Chairman Bob Francis says Stevens knew his stuff when it came to aviation.
He was enormously knowledgeable. I mean, you can see by the amount of activity that is associated with him in Alaska.
Now, I'm unclear about the plane crash. So was it a passenger plane, or was he flying a plane?
He was among 5 people killed in a crash in southwest Alaska. I'm really not sure
I know very little because I actually just I woke up this morning and I went directly to lovely Beaverton to do Outlook Portland, and then I came right here. And the first thing I heard about it was when I sat down today, I don't know, about maybe an hour ago, and I started to prep for the show, and I saw that he was dead. I have like zero information about the actual the nature of the crash itself, but they're making it sound as though it's a plane he was flying. When they're quoting a guy saying he was very knowledgeable about the air travel and whatnot. Let me just see if
well,
I can...
Well, it was near Dillingham, Alaska. This is actually, interestingly, it's the second time he's been in a plane crash. He survived a Learjet crash in Anchorage in 1978 that killed five people, including his first wife. This time, though, not so much. The private plane was carrying Stevens and a former head of NASA. And it crashed last night in a rugged stretch of southern Alaska. At least three people survived, but five people died.
Yeah, and I'm looking here on Drudge, and it doesn't. There's no sort of explication as to what anything else about the nature of the crash. So it seems as though it might have been a thing where he was flying. But he was, I guess, by all accounts, a guy who, well, as the NTSB guy just said, sort of knew his stuff.
Yeah, Francis said the longtime Alaska Republican did a lot for air safety.
He is one of the fathers and pioneers of the next generation of air traffic control that the world is going to have.
Now, is Ted Stevens the guy? It's so confusing. It all just sort of drifts together. Is Ted Stevens the guy that was the refrigerator full of money? No, I'm confusing him with that. I'm confusing him with that guy in Baltimore, maybe.
I don't know. He did. He almost lost the Senate, though, at one point.
Because there was a whole ethics thing going on with him. Yeah, okay, that's what I'm thinking of.
The federal judge dismissed a conviction last year when he was convicted of lying on Senate forms about home renovations and gifts he received.
That's what it is. He is not the guy that had the freezer full of cash.
No, that was a different fella.
That was some guy back east. All right. It's all coming together for me now. We should immediately begin the rumor that Sarah Palin had him killed. Everyone, go. All right, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
The Portland Timbers have named John Spencer as their head coach for the first season in Major League Soccer. Spencer, a native of Glasgow, Scotland, will be formally introduced at a news conference tomorrow in Portland. He's been an assistant coach with the Houston Dynamo for the last five seasons. He resigned from that team last month. Prior to coaching, Spencer played professionally for 18 years for clubs such as Chelsea, Everton, Rangers, and the Colorado Rapids. He was a two-time Major League Soccer All-Star while playing for Colorado. A news release from the Timbers said Spencer, his wife, and their three children are in the process of moving to Portland.
And so he's the coach?
Yes, he's new coach when the Timbers move to the Major League in 2011.
Wait, is that happening?
Yeah. Yes.
This is what happens when they fire me. There's like a 7-month gap where I just have no. It's you know what it is. My brain.
This was a huge thing in Portland. Major League Soccer is coming to Portland.
I understand that. I've done. We did many shows. Well, I did, on Outlook Portland, we had Anna Griffin actually, who follows soccer. Not as much as like say your Sean Levy, because really nobody follows
nobody
it as
does.
Much as Sean Levy. Sean Levy, who you get the idea that he just. Here's the thing about Sean Levy from the Oregonian is that, you know, I've met him in person, I don't know, maybe a handful of times, and we had him on Outlook, and he was, you know, he's a great guy. But I don't remember him actually being this way on the set, but when I picture him, it is always with his sleeves rolled up and just sort of clenching those hairy knuckled hands of his just looking for a guy to punch. I don't know why.
I don't know why either. Sean isn't...
He's a very mild man
in
terms of personality.
He gets a little intense and will swear a lot, but he doesn't seem very punchy.
He seems like one of those... He's sort of this like half Alan Arkin, half Chaz Palminteri. Sort of, you know, I had nuns in school. I hated those blue-haired bitches.
Oh, the stories I could tell you about Sean Levy off the air.
Do so now. Oh, damn
no,
you.
No, I can't.
Well, in any event. But my brain is like one big... It's like one big Watergate tape where there's just an 18-minute gap, you know, where Rose Woods just pressed the wrong pedal or something. The last thing I heard is that, Merritt Paulson? Who's the guy whose dad pays for everything he does? That's Merritt Paulson. That's the guy who owns the Timbers. So it seems like the last thing I heard is that he was trying to wheedle more money out of his dad to try to get a place for them to play.
Yeah.
Because there was something about how they couldn't actually split the stadium with another team because of the way that the seats have to be like orientated around the field or some crap. And then there was a whole question of like, well, who's going to pay for it? And isn't it just going to be a big money suck? The answer is yes, by the way. The reason you can tell it's not going to make any money is because they want other people to pay for it. If it was going to be a huge moneymaker, they would just pay for it themselves and figure that, that they'd immediately be in the chips because it was going to be so massively successful.
But that's the way of Major League Sports, no matter what the sport, though, is they tell a town, hey, I'll tell you what, you guys pay for the stadium, and we'll bring you our highly lucrative team to play here.
I'd much rather have that than, schools or for them to fix the road in front of my house. All right, well, in any event. So there you go. So there's that.
Yeah. A judge granted bail for a JetBlue flight attendant who was accused of cursing out a passenger on an airplane public address system, then grabbed some beer from the galley and exited on an emergency slide. The man has become something of a national hero. He was led into a courtroom yesterday in New York City to be arraigned on charges of criminal mischief, reckless endangerment, and trespassing. The judge set his bail at $2,500, but it wasn't immediately clear when Slater might be able to post the money. His attorney, Howard Terman, pointed to a passenger as being part of the problem.
So you're trying to do your best to provide safety for passengers, and you have rudeness and lack of civility among the traveling public.
That's awesome. And so the deal is, what is the backstory of what he did exactly?
It was a flight from Pittsburgh to New York, and it was taxiing to the gate at JFK. A passenger stood up to retrieve his luggage, and Stephen Slater, the flight attendant, asked him to sit down. The Wall Street Journal reported that the flight attendant was allegedly hit in the head by the compartment door of the luggage. He asked the passenger for an apology and was denied and received an expletive instead. The FU expletive.
Okay, so this is the passenger told him this.
Right.
All right. And so then he snapped, apparently.
Yes. And he then got on the PA system and announced to all of the passengers basically the same expletive that had just been said to him.
You can all get effed.
Right. Especially that one passenger who just hit him in the head.
Genius.
He said, I've been in this business 28 years and I've had it. Then he grabbed a couple of beers from the galley, activated the emergency chute, slid out of the plane, and went to his car and drove home.
See, that's wonderful. How many people have longed to do that at their place of employment, where you just say, you just give a long sort of laundry list of grievances, complaints, grudges, gripes, bitches, moans, and then you say, and I'm out, and I'm taking, this glue gun with me. And also your sandwich, sir. And he just grab it, and then that he actually activates the sort of, what is it, the inflatable slide thing?
Yeah.
Is that what he went down?
Yes.
It wasn't even like the ladder. It was the whole thank you for flying Southwest as you're sort of floating in the middle of the ocean thing.
Right.
That's fantastic.
And of course he the FAA was notified, and then they went to his house and arrested him
because he's a terrorist.
Well, and because there are rules about activating things on airplanes, because to be fair, if there had been some runway crew underneath when that happened,
that's just an inflatable thing.
They could have
thing.
Been injured.
Whatever.
You're not supposed to go activating things on airplanes without the express okay of Major League Baseball or
whatever. Just one more time here. So what was the nature of the initial dispute between him and the passenger?
There was a passenger who wouldn't sit down. And then the person was retrieving their luggage, did not sit down, smacked him in the head with the compartment door while they were getting the luggage out, and then swore at him.
Okay, and the plane had already landed. In other words,
yes.
The plane had arrived. It wasn't like it was waiting to take off. The plane
No.
had arrived at its destination, and the guy says, everybody please just remain in your seats. Passenger gets it. See, this is one of those things. It's amazing how the positioning of the story or just... I guess I should say it's funny how little you have to do to get me to entirely change my perspective on something. Because normally, we've all done that thing where you land on the tarmac and then, some guy gets on the thing and says, we have arrived at our destination. Please remain in your seats and keep all your cell phones turned off and blah, blah, blah until the plane has come to a complete. And meanwhile, you're going, we're on the ground. I can look outside. The ground is a foot away. We've landed.
But then again, even while the plane is taxiing and even when they tell you to sit down, there are always those jackass businessmen who can't wait that extra minute and a half.
Turn on their Bluetooth.
And have to, leap up and start fiddling with the overhead to get their suitcase out because their time is so much more valuable than everybody else's.
I think what it's come down to here is that I, as in many stories, I sort of root for everybody and nobody all at once because I get all kinds of pissy at people, the flight attendants or stewardesses or whatever it is you're supposed to call them now. I mean, Flying used to be such an enjoyable activity in this country. And I'm not trying to be like, and everything was better when I was growing up or whatever, because most things weren't. But that's a thing that has demonstrably gotten worse, is the experience of flying. I mean, it's just like torture. I used to really enjoy flying, but now it's just one of those things I dread, and I just drag my feet, and I just have to be, I have to have absolutely no other alternative before I will fly at this point.
On the other hand, you know what's really lovely? The train.
Yeah, I suppose.
Have you ever taken a train up to Seattle or something?
Well, I took a train from New York to D.C. and D.C. to New York. I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
Well, the train here that goes from Portland to Seattle is lovely, relaxing, beautiful trip. The seats are comfortable.
I guess
the scenery's gorgeous.
I don't have any problem with the train. The train is, I don't fault that. Laura and I took the train to Seattle a while back, and it was nice. It's just, so it's not so much that the train is bad, it's just that flying is awesome. But they have now just closed off that avenue of pleasure for me. So really it just comes down to that I just like people who snap and just decide they're not going to take anymore. It doesn't really even matter what it is. Even if you are my sworn enemy, even if you're on the opposite side of the equation, because I usually view anybody who works for the airline as being my enemy, as being my opponent, until they prove that they do not deserve to be labeled as that. But I like people who just wake up one day and just decide, like, F this, I am sick of all of you, and then take the appropriate measures. That's a thing that'll get me on your side immediately.
I'm surprised more people don't snap in that job, though.
I mean, it's just dealing with just the lowest common denominator of human behavior, like and in a small metal tube where you can't escape.
You spend your day in a small airless metal tube that could crash into something, which makes it kind of even worse than being in a cubicle in a building, because the cubicle in the building, odds are that it's not going to crash into the ocean.
Well, and just filled with viruses and babies. Yeah. Viruses plaguing your immune system, babies deafening your ears. And just having to listen to Rise of the Silver Surfer play on the in-flight movie screen like 100 times a month.
And irritating people that you have to deal with who think you're a waitress.
Yeah. That's where I get off the plane, because you are a waitress if you work on a plane. Let's have no illusions about that. See, that's the thing. That's the thing where I disagree with you, because they say, well, I'm not a waitress. Really, you are.
They kind of are.
I press a button, I ask you to bring me something, you bring it. You're a waitress.
Except they don't bring it to you. You press a button and they come, and then they tell you they can't get you anything right now.
I'd like another one of those ineffective pillows filled with Kleenex. Thanks. Yeah. That's great. How much will that be?
Have you ever been bumped up to first class, though?
Yes.
It's a whole other world up there.
Yeah, just once.
That whole Seinfeld episode was absolutely correct. It is. I was on a Reno Air flight once, and they bumped me up to business class to first class.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, we haven't taken off yet, but would you like a drink? They're free. Here's your giant basket of snacks with your own bottle of wine and wine glasses in it and fresh baked cookies. And then it's like, oh, and I ate my croissant chicken sandwich and my cookies. And they're like, oh, would you like another free basket of stuff? I'm like, this is the seats were leather. Yeah.
No, that's the that's your motivation for becoming wealthy right there, so that you can ride in first class.
It was only a 45-minute flight, and I wished it would last forever.
When I, in fact, right before I got the gig in Portland, this would have been back in 1998. I guess I can say it now because it doesn't matter. Because I think the guy who opted not to hire me has himself been fired in a little bit of late coming universal karma. But I was flown to Wisconsin to audition for a gig there, for a talk show position. And so they flew me out there, and they had me do, like, two shows. By the way, the slot that I was auditioning to take over in the station was already filled by a guy who went on vacation and was not being told that in his absence other people were auditioning for his job. So that's radio in a nutshell right there. And I was just supposed to say, filling in for so-and-so who's soaking up the sunny rays somewhere, doesn't know that he's fired already. So they flew me out there to audition for the gig. It was in Madison, and they flew me there first class, and then when they decided they weren't going to hire me, they flew me back like coach or whatever the hell, like ninth class, no frills, where they just duct-taped me to the wing of the plane. So, all right, here's Don Taylor.
In an update of a story from yesterday, the men who were feared drowned during a boating trip in Idaho, leaving 5 young children adrift in the boat,
have been found alive despite their own stupidity.
Well, not so much.
They've been found waterlogged, but still conscious, despite the fact that they were almost certainly not wearing life vests.
No.
What do we got?
No, they're dead.
No.
Yeah.
Another humanity. Terrible loss of life.
Corporal Leilani Morgan of the Power County Sheriff's Office says none of the men were wearing life jackets.
I'm stunned.
There were enough vests for all four adult men to have them on. However, they did not have them on.
It's almost hard to believe.
Yeah, one of the men thought it would be funny to push one of the other men overboard.
It's funny, but just not to them.
Yeah, especially since he couldn't swim. So the second man jumped in, and then the two of them were in the water not being able to swim. So a third one jumped in, and the three of them couldn't swim.
We're really lucky. It was like a low vacation week in Idaho, or the entire state would be dead by now.
The last adult on the boat managed to grab a life jacket before he jumped in to try to save the other three, but he wasn't wearing it and may have only hooked an arm through it. Meanwhile, the breezy weather caused the boat to drift away from the men.
That's wonderful. Oh, that's excellent.
Authorities have not released the names of the men to give their families time to notify other relatives and probably to spare them humiliation.
I was just going to say, and to grieve if you really feel like that's necessary.
Corporal Morgan of the Sheriff's Office says the remains were recovered a little over 24 hours after the men disappeared.
We were able to get a hit with a cadaver dog in a general area, and they were able to locate the bodies in close proximity to each other with the sonar devices.
Jesus.
Cadaver dog has got to be a bad job for a dog.
I want to form a band called Cadaver Dog, you know, and then just like go town to town playing metal versions of Smith songs.
Morgan says they all apparently, as I mentioned before, had been horsing around on the boat.
Horsing, or does it actually say that?
Yes, it does.
Is that said in the context of a quote, or is that actually part of the news story?
I'm reading this thing that you gave me with the audio.
But I mean, is it in quotes though?
No, it just
from
says.
From my understanding, they were not aware that the one subject that they were horse playing with, they
horse
threw him off the boat into the water. And did not know that he could not swim until he started to panic and drowned.
Not so funny now, is it, funny man? That's what getting grab ass will play you. No, you quit screwing around. I'm sorry, it's like a 1% joke.
Yeah.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
Police say they found a marijuana growing operation in a Beaverton home Friday after receiving a tip from a postal inspector that an illegal drug was shipped to the address. Beaverton officers said the postal inspector found peyote in a package that was shipped internationally. That led officers from a Westside interagency narcotics team and agents from the Department of Homeland Security to make contact with a person living at the address.
How would the postal inspector find peyote unless they open your mail at some point?
I don't know. I don't know how they... Honestly...
They're not allowed to open your mail, I didn't think. I didn't think anybody...
Yeah, but they... Sometimes they randomly bring drug dogs through sniffing things.
Does peyote have a smell? I don't know anything about peyote.
I don't know. I don't know anything about peyote either. But I think that they can x-ray things if they find them suspicious.
Interesting, because I didn't think anybody, including the government, was legally anyway, allowed to open your mail, unless they were the intended recipient. I don't really know.
Someone could have already been investigating the person who shipped it.
Well, okay, that's true. I guess maybe they could get because they can probably get a warrant to search your mail, I would imagine. Okay.
The resident admitted to ordering the peyote and allowed officers to search his home. Detectives said they found an active marijuana growing operation that had more than 50 mature plants.
What an idiot. Where is this, in Beaverton?
In Beaverton.
Never give the cops permission to search your... Do we need to do like a 101 again for criminals? For law-abiding
citizens?
Just say
no.
Get a warrant. Three little words. Get a warrant. Could have spared you all of this.
Police also said they found more than 30 peyote cacti, steroids, 2 pounds of dried marijuana, and 5 guns. The home is not registered with the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program.
That's hard to believe as well. All right. Good God Almighty. You know what I want to find out is whether that marijuana dispensary that I think is up the street from us, whether the bakery that is directly adjacent, if they do like a bustling business there, if they have noticed that their income has ticked up demonstrably since they opened the Weedorium, like right across the way.
Weedorium is a good name.
There's nothing identifying it on the outside, but that almost indicates even further that that's what it is, because I don't think they are allowed to identify themselves. I think the smoke-in places are not allowed to label themselves as such.
No, it's people just be going in there thinking it was Amsterdam.
Right, well, because, and I don't think it's like a... I guess maybe they make a show card or something at the door. I don't know. We should go find out. We should just go in.
Is it like a storefront? Because if it was a home,
no,
it
it's a business. It's not a residential.
Okay.
I mean, you know the building I'm talking about, don't you?
I don't think so.
I don't want to identify because I don't want to send the ne'er-do-wells over there. I'll tell you. I will put it this way. If you were to just go out on this street right here, not the numbered one but the named one, and if you were to go. Just up. It's like maybe, I don't know, 7 blocks from here. So, and it's a, and I only know because I know someone who works at the adjacent bakery, and she told me that, that's what it was. She's like, that place across the street, it's a Weedorium.
Well, she's a bakery. She should know. They come straight across the street over to her place.
Sounds like they're both bakeries, Dawn.
When I lived in North Portland, I used to drive past a place on Greeley that's called, like, Northwest Bible Academy or something like that. And the thing is, it's this two-story building, and it's got a storefront, and it's got apartments upstairs. And you can see, like, when they pull the curtains back upstairs, that the apartments upstairs are just crammed full of, like, bunk beds. And there's always just a ton of these, you know, very sort of button-down shirt wearing kind of just got their haircut short guys walking around.
Right.
The place is some kind of cult.
Yeah.
I just know it's some kind of cult. It may say Bible something on the side, but I swear to God, they are planning something.
No, there's one of those. We've talked about this before on the show. There's one of those up on, where is it? Like, I want to say 82nd, but I just think everything's on 82nd. Where did you and I have breakfast that time? Or lunch, maybe. It was like on, it was like on 82nd.
I don't know. We've eaten
somewhere.
Lunch a couple, but there was the Albina Library Cafe. That's in Northeast.
Man, no, I don't think it was that. Well, in any event. But there's some park near there that is just crammed with these tiny little, like...
Oh, that I know what you're
like
talking about.
Shack-dwelling things. You know what it looks like? It's a whole... It looks like a trailer park, but it's full of that box from Cool Hand Luke that they make him sleep in after his mom dies.
Yeah, no, it's a whole church's compound.
That's a nutcase
And they
compound.
Have all of those little one-room outbuildings for people to stay in when they come into town, I guess.
But there's like 50
of
them.
For brainwashing.
Yeah. Allegedly.
Or whatever.
Or to worship Jesus.
Yeah, that's another one of those places where you just go, oh, they're planning
something
kind of uprising.
Yeah, something untoward is happening there. By the way, you're listening to Legion of News. You can also hear it on your mobile device if you would like. That's at mobile.pdx.fm, mobile.pdx.fm. Listen to the warm and crisp timbre that my voice has today.
It is.
It's amazing what turning on the microphone properly will do for your delivery. It's mobile.pdx.fm, and you can also get this program on iTunes later on today, as well as at legionofnews.com. Speaking of other things, coming up at 1 o'clock today, I swear to God, over on the board to my right, it just says penis Nazi. And I don't know if that's like being a soup Nazi, but in porn, I have no... Apparently that's coming up today at the Rick Emerson Show. Also, here's the big news for today. Well, we got several things. One, penis watch. Dawn asked me, actually, I'm playing a little bit of fun with you there, because before the show, Dawn just said, do we have a Nazi watch? And I just said, yeah, sure, why not? So I guess we'll have a Nazi watch today for reasons passing understanding.
So we are debuting a brand new sounder for Nazi watch?
I can't imagine we're going to be using it all that often, but I mean, sure, why not? So have at it. So we got a penis watch coming up today, a Nazi watch. And if that in and of itself doesn't get you to listen, then, you know, you are beyond my assistance. We have the top five. This is sort of to counteract Dawn's top five seething, sulking, brooding songs yesterday. We have the top five absurdly happy songs found on my, I'll just say iPod, even though it's
aww.
Not, but the top five absurdly happy songs found in my MP3 collection. And then, but the really big thing today, the thing that I am, about which I am very excited, we're going to be talking to a guy today named Ben Steinbauer. And you may not know Ben Steinbauer, and you may, in fact, not even know the movie that he has made, because I didn't until last night, but you know the subject. At least you should. There is a little viral video that has gone around the internet for years, and it actually predates the internet. I mean, it's part of that found footage festival. It's this guy, Jack Rebney. And if you know Jack Rebney, God bless you. If you don't, go to the YouTubes right now. I swear to God, this instant. Now, it's not safe for work. There's some profanity there. But he's the angry Winnebago salesman. And right now there's a whole bunch of people going, that guy! It is that guy. So there is a whole document, and I'm going to post it to Facebook here in a bit so you can watch it. There's a whole documentary about Jack Rebney, the angry Winnebago salesman. It's just this guy who snaps while trying to film a Winnebago infomercial. It's just the best thing ever.
It's called Winnebago Man.
The documentary is at Cinema 21 called Winnebago Man. We're going to talk to the director today. That's happening at 1 o'clock at the Rick Emerson Show at rickemerson.com. If you're a subscriber, you get to hear it. If not, that's just hard cheese, friend. Or you can subscribe, you know. Really, it's up to you. It's your choice. You have free agency. I can't make these decisions for you. I mean, I wish I could. I guess I could if I was there and had one of your family members, like, in some sort of secure location and they were being menaced in some way. Don't make me do that, because I'll do it. I will threaten your family. I will come to your house, and I will kidnap your family and beat them senseless. I will kill members of your family. Anyway, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Let's do some entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio, I'm sorry, the Legion of News radio program.
A video that's only now surfaced but quickly has gone viral on YouTube shows teen sensation Justin Bieber being hit on the head with a thrown plastic bottle while on stage during a radio station concert in Sacramento in December.
Now, Ryan White mentioned this yesterday. I didn't even bother to look it up because I thought it was just going to be like the thing of him getting hit with the door that was sort of disappointing. Is this better than that, do you think?
There's not a whole lot to it, just the fact that it's Justin Bieber getting hit with a bottle. He gets hit with a bottle, he pulls back and yells, "Ow! That didn't feel good! I don't know why she just threw that at me!" TMZ.com says, it all went down at the Jingle Ball concert back in December when some concert goer with an incredibly accurate arm fired off a water bottle while Bieber was front and center.
That's not nearly as interesting as it ought to be.
No, I mean, it's really not.
No, no. So what?
There will be lots of Elvis sightings in Memphis this week. From gospel to rock and roll, tribute artists like Victor Trevino will converge on the city to honor the king. He says one of the most popular songs he's asked to sing is Heartbreak Hotel.
Why are we honoring the king?
I don't know. You handed me this.
No, but
this
does it say? You always say that as though...
I assume you researched these things.
Research.
It's Elvis week, Rick. It's the annual Elvis Week.
Thank you. Thank you for making that up.
Well, since my baby left me, will I find a new place?
No, we're done. I'm not playing any more of that.
Trevino will be one of many performing at the annual Elvis Week.
You have the big competition. You also have the tent. You have Graceland. You have the Elvis Insiders. You have other concerts with people that really performed with Elvis, like DJ Fontana, the TCB band, the Sweet Inspirations.
I guess at this point, we are only hopeful that the regulators will give us some clarity about the expectations, and then we can plan on that basis.
Trevino explains why he thinks this year is a cut above the rest.
I think this year will probably be very, very big due to the fact that if Elvis was alive today in 2010, he would be 75 years old.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
All right, there we go. So it's his birthday.
And it's annual Elvis Week. So I guess they have Elvis Week during his birthday.
I thought you were making that up. I thought you were just bluffing.
No.
When you said annual Elvis Week, I thought you were just sort
I
of
never
like,
lie during the news.
In lieu of any other explanation, you were just sort of punting with that.
No.
All right, so it's his birthday.
I would have, if I was making it up, I'd have come up with something far more interesting than that.
All right.
Lawrence Fishburne's 18-year-old daughter, Montana Fishburne, reportedly talked to E! News in an exclusive interview about making her own X-rated tape, which will be released by Vivid Entertainment later this month.
Do not want.
I'd say about 16, I lost my virginity and the whole sexual world sparked my interest, she told E! News anchor Juliana, whatever her last name is. And while she said she can see how Kim Kardashian's sex tape launched the reality star's career, even though Kim didn't want it released, the difference is Montana really does want to do porn, not just break into show business because she really likes it. I think it was just really wanting to explore sexuality, she said, because I know it's such a big world, and I was like, wow, well, since I like sex, I wanted to see everything that I would like, every kind of fantasy I would like, and porn is a way I could explore that.
I just don't understand the whole thing about getting into porn at that level at this point, because it seems like getting into porn now is like signing a record deal now. Where the time where that was just, if you were a breakout star there, that you were just going to make $1 jillion, it seems like that time has passed. You know what I mean? It's the porn seems like not a dying industry as such, but a place where there's not going to be a lot of millionaires made.
I'm not going to make any comments on Montana Fishburne's possible daddy issues or her own emotional problems, but we'll say that last year she was busted for allegedly prostituting herself, but reportedly cut a deal with prosecutors who dropped solicitation and prosecution charges in exchange for her pleading no contest to misdemeanor criminal trespass and had her enter a work alternative program.
See, but the prostituting yourself thing, I can understand that more than porn, because it seems like there is more money. I mean, she's got the name issue, I guess, going on. Yeah. She's got the fame or whatever, but that's not really going to help all that much. Like, really, who's going to go rent the porn because it's Furious Styles' daughter, you know? No one.
Or so, Cowboy Curtis, for that matter.
Yes. See, I'm glad you did that. You could have gone I'm glad you didn't go the Morpheus route, because that's just, Wait, I'm going to make a little... I'm writing down a crude joke that I'll repeat next hour. All right, okay. Hold on. I'm writing down a crude witticism. There we go. It seems like there's more financial upside, though, in hooking than there is in making porn, because...
particularly for her, because she... You'd think, first of all, other than the fact that she looks like Lawrence Fishburne, only with better skin and makeup, she's an attractive young woman. And her last name is Fishburne. So you'd think that if she worked for, say, you know, an expensive outcall service,
right,
that the name recognition would still get her business.
Yeah, and I think that renting a porn film with her in it is based almost solely on, like, novelty value.
Yeah.
And so it's like, how long can you really string that along? Like, how long... In other words, I think as opposed to hookers, I don't really know, I'm just speculating here, but I think as opposed to hookers, I think guys burn through, like, porn interest pretty quickly, and the way you can tell is because the porn industry burns through its celebrities really quickly. So I think that the turnover rate in the porn industry in terms of who's at the, sort of the top of the heap, I think that must be just, you know, just from month to month almost. Whereas
well,
if
and
you're
when a, you consider that... porn actresses still, like, a lot of them travel around and do personal appearances and go do stuff at the Bunny Ranch and stuff like that to supplement their porn
income.
Yeah,
and they
income.
Have to strip and they have to whatever. And that's a lot of work. Even
yeah.
if she's making a lot for the first movie, it's like how many movies with her are they really going to pay her a lot to do?
Yeah.
You know, that's especially a company like Vivid, which is just losing money, or at least not making nearly as much as they used to, because they're just because the internet is basically just a porn delivery device. That's all it exists for.
Now, if I was in the porn industry, I would hire her to reprise all of her father's most famous roles in X-rated parodies.
I don't want to think
of
about
those
that.
Films.
That's not a thing. That's not a thing I want to think about. Cue zany DJs somewhere to do a contest where you rename all of his films with porn titles. That one's free.
Anyway, TLC, the cable network behind hits John and Kate Plus 8 and 19 Kids and Counting, is hoping to strike ratings gold again with Sister Wives, a series about a polygamist family in Utah that will premiere in September. Much like the HBO drama Big Love, which follows a polygamist and his three wives, Sister Wives is about Cody and his wives Mary, Janelle, and Christine, and their 13 kids. Unlike Bill Loves Bill Henriksen, though, Cody is looking to add to his family by taking on a fourth wife, Robin, who has three children of her own. For TLC, Sister Wives will likely generate a little controversy, but the network is no stranger to that. Besides its shows about the now-divorced John and Kate Gosselin, TLC has been getting some heat for Sarah Palin's Alaska, a documentary series featuring the 2008 vice presidential nominee, which is expected to also premiere this year.
Excellent. Well, there you go. I don't know why that should be all that scandal. I mean, goddamn, every time, that there's any one of those documentary sex things, you know, like on Showtime or what is that called, like Sex Shock or Future Sex or whatever that show on the Showtime. It's like their real sex equivalent.
Yeah.
And it's always filmed in Oregon, and it's always, you know, it's called polyamorous relationships. You know, it's always the same thing. It's just like some hairy-legged chick and some other girl and some guy, you know, who's bald with no job, living together, having icky sex in like a hammock swing somewhere while a guy eats potato salad off a paper plate in the background.
You know,
that's it.
About 5 years ago or so, when Real Sex was still, you know, I don't know if it's still on the air, but
it probably is.
They actually came to Portland to shoot an orgy party with the local poly community.
Kill me.
And I heard about it after the fact because a number of the people involved were really upset because they shot some footage of the party, but they said that at the time the film crew and the people spent most of the time in the kitchen, just interviewing people standing around in the kitchen. And when they actually saw the episode, there was virtually no footage of any of the sex stuff, and they didn't understand why.
Well,
and all I could think of was it's like. Really?
Acres of pink, undulating, unattractive flesh.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not being lookist. It's not like I'm a beauty queen, all right? If you don't see me stripping everything off and saying, film me naked, it's going to be awesome for everybody. Because nobody wants to see that. And I'm aware of that. Rick Emerson knows his limits. I consider myself fortunate that they even put, like the top fifth of me on camera anywhere. Much less... You know, you and just your equally sort of blubbery friends kind of writhing around in a sheet of Visqueen somewhere in a guy's living room in Tigard and thinking you're sexy. No. As Sam Kinison once said, the problem with filming yourself in you know, having relations, which I have never done, by the way, just for exactly this reason, that's a... What was that look?
No, I'm agreeing with you wholeheartedly.
About never doing it?
Yeah, that's been floated a few times.
No.
And it's like, no, that's not going to happen. No.
As Sam Kinison once said, you don't look like you feel, kids. So just a little FYI.
Yeah, the thing is that I think most people don't understand is that most people are, even attractive people, are not what we can consider conventionally photogenic.
Yeah.
And then you get out of, say, Southern California and to perhaps Oregon. And people here even less so.
Yeah, no, it's...
And you may feel really good about yourself, and God bless you. And you like, you know, your three boyfriends and your weird S&M dwarf, dungeon master, and whatever you're into, that's awesome. But that doesn't mean that it's something that HBO is going to find appropriate for their nighttime television.
No, and it's certainly, and let me just tell you right now, speaking as the average American male, it's nothing I want to watch. Not at all, not ever, not under any circumstances. So, you know, just take your Nancy Friday and your crystals and go home. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
New on TV tonight, we have a new episode of 18 to Life on the CW, in which Jesse tries to win Judith over at a bridal shower. Tom is persuaded to let the fathers attend the bachelor party. I don't know what any of that is about. On ABC, there's a new episode of Shaq Versus, in which the 7'1", 320-pound NBA star laces on the gloves to challenge 5'9", 150-pound Shane Mosley in an exhibition boxing match in Las Vegas, and he also attempts some hocus-pocus with Penn and Teller.
Have they done, is there a series that does like a man versus machine?
I'd like to see Shaq versus, like, a
gun.
Crocodile.
Yeah. Like you went to crocodile, went to gun.
Shaq just, versus a cannon.
Shaq versus death. But
versus a wood chipper.
Have they done, like, a sort of, like, a man versus, you know, a man versus, like, I keep going to, like, the day John Henry died sort of a thing. Like, you know, where, like, a man versus a steam engine or something. It seems like that would be, you know, well, because they do, like, the Kasparov versus Deep Thought or whatever that new IBM thinky chess machine is.
Oh, and one more. On Spike tonight, we have a new episode of the show Scrappers. A deli freezer vexes Sal. Darren and Frankie find porn. Greg gets a truck driving lesson. And Dino and Mimo enter cyberspace.
I don't even know what this show is. I know we talked about it last week.
I don't know either.
But here's the thing. You talked about it last week and you explained the premise, and now I've forgotten it already.
I have too. I think it's something of a scrap yard or something.
Well, I'm assuming it's like a sub-Jersey Shore meets meets like a you know, the what is it? The Orange County Choppers,
yeah,
guys.
I don't know.
All right. Well, in any event. And this is all true. If you're asking yourself I was just about to do the worst ever segue into this cleaning solution thing, and it was gonna be back to the sex party with the paper plates full of potato salad. Just for the sake of decorum and taste and everyone's lunch, I will not do that. It's not a thing that I'm gonna do. I will say
you won't
this.
Talk about getting lube and whipped cream out of the shag carpeting.
Why would you ever say that? What is wrong with you?
I just like watching you wince.
No. No, I wouldn't say that because that's not an issue. That's just not a... they're glad
not
bags
at your
that.
House.
That's a... that's what they make a power washer for. Cement tiles downstairs.
That's why we just tape glad bags over all the furniture first.
That's what they make soundproof vans for, Dawn. Anywho... Michael Beatty is proud to be linked to this section of discussion right here. You were asking, though, if I just lived in a hovel, though, if my house is just like a sty. And it's not. Here's the thing. Somebody asked me, they said, like, let's assume that your house, you know, like, isn't just, you know, revolting all the time. You know, what are you talking about? And this is exactly when this sort of thing comes in handy. So it's what now, August 10th. So Lana just found out that we have a friend of ours. Like 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, maybe coming into town. Somebody's going to be staying with us for a couple of days. And it's that thing where it unfolded in layers. Like, first it was, I'm going to be coming to Portland. Maybe I'll get a chance to see you. And we're like, that's great. Then it was, coming to Portland, I'll definitely get a chance to see you. We should go out to dinner or something. We're like, that's fantastic. Then it was, I'm going to be in Portland. I don't really have a place to stay. So if you know anybody, or if you can find a place that's sort of inexpensive, it fits my budget, let me know. And we said, sure thing. Then, of course, inevitably, it was, coming to Portland, can I sleep at your house? And so this is, you know, and it's just like a person. You don't want to look like a, you know, you just don't want to look like a, like, you know, like you're just a...
I would imagine that you are intensely uncomfortable with that.
Yes, yes, I am on every level. You have no idea how uncomfortable. Just people staying at my house. I don't want to say it creeps me out because that makes me sound like I don't want this person to come to town to visit. But it's just, you know, because then you're just self-conscious about everything, and it's like, you know, and then it's, you know, and then you're just scrubbing and filing and folding and sorting and cleaning and bleaching everything.
And it's like you see everything for the first time in your apartment, and it's never good enough.
And it's just, and it's just everything in your home looks dirty, whether it is or not. So that was what I was going to lead up to: is maybe your carpet's dirty, maybe it's not. But it's going to seem dirty to you. So if you are facing this difficulty and you want to write down the number because you may face it at some point, and the thing is, and then you won't remember the number and you're going to blame me. Like, it's my fault. It's not my fault, friend. So I'm giving you the number. It's 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. The cleaning solution, Michael Beatty. They do residential and commercial work for stain removal, carpet repairs, upholstery, stone, marble. If you've got damage caused by pets or if there's just some sort of strange odor, like maybe you spilled a glass of milk into the carpet and then you didn't bother to clean it up because, hey, it was dry the next day. That's all well and good till the sun hits it. So anyway, write down the number, 971-533-3211, the cleaning solution. Here is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Well, that is all of the entertainment news for now.
Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is coming up today at 1 o'clock. We will be, 1 o'clock today, we'll be speaking with Mr. Ben Steinbauer. He is the director of Winnebago Man. Winnebago Man! Which is playing at Cinema 21 this week. It is a documentary about Jack Rebney, also known as the Angry Winnebago Salesman. And I'm going to post a little Safe for Work thing about that at my website here in just a few. We'll also be doing the top five absurdly happy songs found on my iPod. And we'll have a Nazi watch, unbelievably, and a penis watch. Here's Dawn Taylor.
The man who shot his gun twice at a suspected getaway car used by thieves has taken a plea deal in court. Roger Witter, 48, of Gresham, pleaded guilty to disorderly conduct. He was arrested and charged after Gresham police said he pulled out a gun and fired two rounds at a getaway car used by thieves who had just robbed an AT&T store in Gresham on May 25th. No one was injured at the shooting. As a result of his plea, the charge was reduced to a violation, and the judge dismissed the other charge he was facing, discharging a firearm. Witter was ordered to perform 8 hours of community service as a result of his sentence. He told KGW News that he plans to face paint with kids at Dornbecker Children's Hospital.
So he shot at some people, and they've decided to put him in the vicinity of children.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you should like this guy. This is a guy is a perfect candidate for sending a fruit basket.
Oh, wait,
basically, there were people robbing an AT&T store. He ran after them and shot his gun at them after the thieves were escaping.
See, I missed that whole part in the whole Dornbecker thing. So they stole his bicycle or they were attempting to steal it?
There's no bicycle in here at all.
What were they stealing?
They were robbing an AT&T store.
Why have I got a bicycle in my hand?
I have no idea.
This is conflating with something else. It's completely unrelated. Okay.
So you don't listen to me when I talk, do you?
I do. It's just that sometimes it just comes through as sort of a thing. Okay, so I must be then confusing this with something else, and I apologize for the bad bicycle thief pun there, too.
Two guys were robbing an AT&T store.
Does he work there?
That I do not know, but I'm
thinking
quite
possibly. But he was there. He was at the store.
He was in the vicinity of the store.
There's no bicycle involved in any level.
There is no bicycle mentioned in this story at all.
They were attempting to rob the store. What, is like a stick-up? Or were they burgling after hours or something?
I'm imagining it was probably a stick-up.
Okay. They try to rob it. They run. He chases after them and shoots at them.
Yeah. They jump in the getaway car and are driving away, and he's shooting at them as they're driving away.
Awesome.
So now he gets charged with discharging a firearm and disorderly conduct.
Now, do we know definitively that guys were robbing the store and that they were armed?
Yes. We don't know that they were armed, but we know that...
But they were caught?
They were thieves. And they were, I don't know if they were caught. They were thieves. They were in their getaway car.
It's on camera or something?
Somebody up here, and probably the people at the AT&T store said, those are the guys that robbing us, and they...
Well, see, I didn't know if he was, like, the only employee, or again, if he was, like, maybe, I don't know, if it was closed and he was cleaning it or something. So I just wanted, before we award a fruit basket, I don't want to have to rescind it.
Thieves, getaway car, he fired his gun at them. He had to go before a judge for this thing. They dismissed the discharging a firearm charge so that and reduced his to just a violation. for disorderly conduct.
Okay, so I'm going
to... he has to perform 8 hours of community service as first sentence, and he said that he's going to do it by face-painting children at Dornbecker Children's Hospital and may very well perform more than the required 8 hours.
And so I had mentioned yesterday in the Rick Emerson Show that we were going to begin giving fruit baskets to those who shot at or otherwise dealt with intruders into their home. Or people who were just up to no good in the sole discretion of the Rick Emerson Show. So, you know, like, let's say, not that this ever happens in Portland, but let's say you're a cop and there's some guy covered in blood who runs at you with a knife and you do the sensible thing and remove him from the gene pool. Other people might criticize you. I view that as one less guy who's around to menace me. So we're going to start giving fruit baskets out. And
this guy looks like a badass, too.
Oh, you don't want to F with this guy. He'll kill you. He'll kill you dead. He's looking for a reason to kill people. So we had a listener, Julie, who says, Rick, if you need help with a fruit basket idea, I work for a produce company and would be glad to help.
Someone says that he was a customer in the AT&T store.
Even better. A man with no vested stake.
And he had a concealed weapons permit, which apparently he was taken away from him because of doing this. Because it says in the story he's going to reapply for his concealed weapons permit in the future.
You gotta wonder, if they were thieves, they had to have been... I mean, they're stating it here as though it was like a definitive, there were thieves. So I'm thinking either the people at the store said, yes, those are the guys, or yes, we were being robbed, or it's on camera. It doesn't say whether they were armed, but one assumes, I would say it is the default assumption that if somebody's robbing your place, he's armed. Because there's an implicit threat, because otherwise why would you give him the money? So God bless this guy. Roger Witter, the Emerson News Network salutes you. All right, how do I find this guy so I can send him some...
Well, he might be in the phone
fruit
book.
Basket.
He's in Gresham.
Or I can find him at Dornbecker, I guess.
That's true.
We should film ourselves. We should go... Let's go present him with a fruit basket and we'll film it.
We'll find out when he's painting children's faces.
And, and we will teach children that if you violate the law, a guy's going to shoot you in the face. So don't do that.
A valuable lesson for children to learn.
I'm just saying. Or not to take any guff. People try to rob from you, they get what's coming to them. There you go. The Emerson News Network salutes you, a guy who shot some dudes almost.
Hero of the day.
Because F those guys. Somebody might say that is a disproportionate punishment. But, I mean, really, you know, a man's store is his castle. So, all right. Well, let's do like one more here and we'll wrap it all up. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock featuring a penis watch, Nazi watch. And maybe we'll try to track this guy down. I might just make some phone calls, see if we can find him. We'll do the top five absurdly happy songs found on my iPod. And we'll be interviewing Ben Steinbauer. He is the director of Winnebago Man, which is a documentary playing at Cinema 21 this week.
Let's end with a happy story. A small dog who refused to return home until a neighbor followed her helped rescue her owner after he collapsed at home following heart surgery. Charles Mitchell said he was working in his yard last week at the Oregon wine country town of Yamhill when an 11-year-old dachshund named Missy scampered up and refused to leave. Mitchell told the dog to go home, but she refused, and when he decided to follow her across the street to investigate, he found his neighbor, Charlie Burden, had collapsed inside his home. Burden had suffered an attack of vertigo and is recovering, but Burden and Mitchell, who have known each other for years, both say Missy is a hero.
Nah. There you go. All right. Is there a photo of the hero dog?
No.
All right.
It's a dachshund. They all kind of look alike.
You say that. You know, Philo's a dachshund.
Philo is not a dachshund. I don't care what they say.
I'm
Your
just
dog
saying
is not a
the
dachshund.
Paper, the form says dachshund. That's all I'm saying. It's just, the official paperwork for my dog says dachshund. All right. Well, you know, you send a dog a gift basket, he's not even going to remember. They're never grateful as they should be. But then that's the sort of thing where they just brain like a goldfish. You know, you just eat it, and then what have you done for me lately? All right, and so forth. Is there anything else to say before we wrap all this up, Don?
Not really. No.
All right, a big finish. Well done. Legion of News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.fm and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Executive producer is Bruce Agler. And, of course, our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow at noon. This has been another exciting episode of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.